Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight-up, actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Happy Tuesday morning, everyone. I never really stated it, but this show has been sticking to a weekly release on every Tuesday morning, 10 a.m. Hong Kong time. If you guys think that's a good time or not, let me know. And Occupy Central in Hong Kong is still going on to this day. And I've been blogging a bit more lately on this podcast, in addition to the audio stuff. You can read my article about the feelings and reflections on it at globalfromasia.com/occupy. I'm trying not to get too political, but I can't keep silent anymore, as it does affect me, this show, and my business so much. Also, I've had a few visitors coming into Hong Kong the past week on their way to DC BKK down in Bangkok, and I had a chance to catch up with Nikos from coinsimple.com and Dimitri from onsign.tv. And Dimitri, I gotta convince them to do a little audio testimonial here, so let's listen in. So we have Dimitri here, and we're here in the Peak Bar restaurant in Soho of central Hong Kong, and it's the first time we got to meet. And thanks, Dimitri, for meeting today, and we had a good conversation. Maybe you can share with us.
Well, thank you, Mike. Well, we had this conversation through email before about the accounting, and it's coming close to the 18-month limit to do the first audit. So yesterday I went to the accounting office that you had recommended. One of the accounting office had a very good meeting, and everything went very smooth. And thank you for taking the time to meet and have lunch here. Thank you for the podcast. You, as always, have some very important information that is very useful for us to have Hong Kong businesses.
Thanks, Dimitri. This is fun to meet you, and I really wish you the best, and we'll keep up with your progress. So, thanks. And Dimitri also inspired me to write a 4,000-word blog post for first-time business travelers coming to Hong Kong, and it's pretty comprehensive, from arriving at the airport to the hotels, phones, SIM cards, etc. You can check it out at globalfromasia.com/hkguide. All this writing has just gotten to be this daily habit. I'm trying to write 2,000 words a day after I finish up my book, Hong Kong Business Supercharged, which will be released on November 1st. We're just going through a lot of edits. I'm having so much fun with this podcast and meeting new business friends from all around the world. It's really a great honor. Thank you, everyone. And now for this week's show, we have Marcus Maher, an Australian entrepreneur based in China for over a decade, who gives us amazing interviews on tips being an entrepreneur and businessman based here in China. He dropped so many value bombs. The show is a little bit longer than normal, but I was just so amazed with everything that he shared. I just had to keep it all in, so enjoy. Okay, thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We are in Atmosphere in Shekou, Shenzhen, China, with the VIP in the VIP room with the VIP here, Marcus. So thank you for being here today, Marcus.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, my pleasure. So maybe you can quickly introduce yourself to our listeners.
Yeah, I'm Australian, 46 years of age, and I'm an entrepreneur. Some people say a serial entrepreneur. I find it very difficult to say no to a good opportunity.
Yeah, you've definitely made quite the mark here in Shenzhen and have many successful businesses. So can you just maybe fill us in on how you first started in China doing business?
My first company in China was a consultancy company, a Shenzhen-based consultancy company. We were problem-solving for rich people. Sometimes they wanted to invest in an overseas company. Sometimes they wanted an overseas company to invest in their company. They were also interested in traveling overseas at the time to learn about new ideas, different things. We would help them do that. Sometimes their kids wanted to study overseas. We'd help them do that as well. They were also interested in buying property overseas, which is something we also were quite good at. So we were just problem solving for rich people. And that was a fantastic insight into the minds of smart Chinese people. I basically got to look at their profit and loss balance sheet, ask them questions about how they actually made it. So I basically got to meet all the smart rich people and learn their secrets. So the limited success I've had so far, a lot of it's due to those meetings and those relationships I built then.
Okay, that's pretty insightful. Thank you, Marcus. And how did you know, with all these different businesses you've done, I think finding the right people is very critical. What do you do to find the right partners?
It's actually a very good question. One of the most important things in China is choosing the right partners, choosing the right managers, and choosing the right staff. It's not very easy for foreigners when they first come to China to actually know who the right people are. And sadly enough, you could almost say the opposite of what they believe to be true will actually end up being true. So choosing the right partners. The easy rule for a foreigner is actually probably to cooperate with a foreigner who's already in China. It would just be the safest bet for them, regardless of what they want to do. They're just going to get it wrong if they try and cooperate with a Chinese partner, because the people that they'll probably meet and that try and latch onto them, more often than not, are the wrong people. Just because you can read body language in the West, just because you have a really good understanding of psychology in the West, doesn't mean you'll have any success using that here in China. The simple rule, the opposite of what you believe to be true is probably true.
That's really good advice. I think people should definitely take note of that. And as a foreign business owner in China, you know, of course, there's tons of articles and blogs out there. I'd just love to hear some insights that you can share. We're open to both positive insights and negative or constructive insights, if you can share with us.
Okay, so having been here for a while and having learned a few things from my successes and failures and others' successes and failures, it's quite a few things I picked up. One of my favorite rules, assume nothing, as things rarely go to plan. You have to hope for the best, but plan for the worst. Too many people make the wrong assumptions, and as a result, they end up being unsuccessful. So once again, assume nothing. Rule number two, if their lips are moving, they're lying. Words are a tool to manipulate. So don't allow you or your company or personnel to be manipulated. This is especially important when operating in a complex business environment like China.
Great. Oh, this is really great stuff. And I guess maybe I could give some feedback. So maybe writing things down would be a way to help maybe protect people in China doing business, or?
Yes, you should always have a contract or an agreement when you're dealing with anybody. But the problem in China is contracts are fluid. They're not solid like they are in the West. And it's in everybody's best interest that they're a bit fluid, because China is just changing so fast. The situation changes so fast. So if you start from a viewpoint where a contract is solid and it's a deal breaker if someone wants to renegotiate, don't even bother coming to China, because the situation is just very, very fluid. You have to be flexible, and you both parties have to be understanding. Number three, if the opportunity seems too good to be true, that's because it probably is. Too many times in China, people get really excited. Sell one toothbrush to 1.4 billion people. Wow. Yeah, so you have to be very, very realistic in China. China's not too different from the West. It's a tough business environment. There are no home runs. It's basically, you're gonna get to home base, one base at a time.
It's definitely true, I think. Yeah, just one RMB from everybody in China wouldn't have to work anymore. So, if you want to keep going, this is really great.
So once again, it's about the team. You need a great team to succeed. Individuals usually get slaughtered in China. It's just too hard to do by yourself. What I always try and do is choose my partners, managers, and staff as wisely as possible, because they're the most important people determining whether we'll be successful or not. Good people equals success. You choose your team at the start. You're going to get some of those people wrong. Some of those people are going to be the wrong people, definitely. But once again, building a team is a constant thing. You're always taking in new people. When you start small and your budget's small, the quality of people you'll have will probably be lower. And as you get bigger and stronger, the quality of people you can attract will be higher. So it's a very fluid thing, choosing your team. Once you do have your team, it's very, very important that you protect them. They understand that you care about them. You have their best interests at heart. Once Chinese people know that you care about them and you're going to do the best you can to ensure that they have a good future, then they can actually, it's easier for them to focus on the job of getting or helping your company get ahead. If they have to worry about where the money's coming from, where rent's coming from, then they're just not going to do their job as well as possible. Once they know you have their best interest at heart, you're going to get dramatically more productivity from them and less, let's call them anomalies.
Yeah, I'm agreeing again, but I think that took me a few years to get, I think, to build the trust and people to believe that you, especially as foreigners. I think Chinese see us coming and going so much that they don't believe us till they see us here for a few years, I think. But that's definitely true, that
once they really trust you and know you're trying to get their back, they'll definitely work for you hard.
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes from family. The family unit is just so important in China, and that's how they think. Once you think of them as part of your family in your company, then they just perform better. Point number six, integrity. It's so important. In a fast changing environment like China, a lot of people try and get rich quick, which means they give substandard products and take quick cash. Sometimes they lie and cheat. So having a reputation for integrity is so important, and it's such a hard thing to maintain in such a complex environment. So do everything you can to protect your reputation. Like they say, you only have one reputation. Try and keep your promises. It's so important. Okay, number eight, one of my favorite quotes. Albert Einstein considered himself to be passionately curious. So funnily enough, I think it's probably a good idea for me to be that as well. And for anyone that's contemplating coming to China, if you're not passionately curious, you're not learning, you're not growing. And in a place like China, the starting point is you know nothing. If you run around thinking you know everything, you're dead, because the truth is you know nothing.
I agree. I think actually probably people think about Americans when they hear this, because I think I'm an American, and a lot of us have this true stereotype that we think we know everything, especially when we come to China. I don't know if other Westerners are the same, but I think definitely Americans have this thinking in their mind that they're smarter than everybody. And, you know, I think sadly that stereotype is true a lot. And it's true, like what you say, Marcus, if you think you know everything before you come here, you're probably going to fail, I think.
I think it's guaranteed failure. Most of us arrive here, and even those of us that are humble, and most of us aren't, we still think we know way more than we actually do. The truth is, we know nothing. That's a starting point. And sadly enough, most of our calls on things, the opposite is probably true, which is pretty scary. Okay, next point. Never lose your cool. You have to think before you act. Hemingway said, before you act, listen. Before you react, think. Before you spend, earn. Before you criticize, wait. Before you quit, try. This is a fantastic quote and very, very relevant for China.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still trying to improve on this point, honestly, personally. But yeah, it's true. I think especially in maybe Eastern culture, especially or in Asia or China, the boss or the Laoban has to not show any emotion, I think. This really, I think when, and I think usually Westerners are more, I think, emotional and passionate, right?
Yes, yes.
So yeah. We usually show I show my emotion. Mm. And I think in Asia, you just want to seem consistently cool at all circumstances.
Yeah, I think the Chinese like stability,
mm-hmm.
and stability and emotion as well.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
Okay, next point. You have to enjoy what you do. If you don't enjoy what you do, it's not going to work, and you'll be dramatically more productive as well. So if you're coming over here to engage in some type of work and it's work, forget about it. If you can't be passionate about it, you can't love it. If it's not something you truly want to do, it's just really not going to work in China. It's going to be too hard. In those tough times, you're just not going to be able to get out of bed.
Yeah.
You'll pack your bags and you'll go home.
I totally agree here. That's true everywhere, especially in China, though. Or especially, I think, outside of your home country. Because the odds are already against you when you're
exactly
out of your home element. So you have to. That's great.
Okay, so another rule for China. Be brave, as fortune favors the bold. The SAS believe who dares wins. Maybe we should as well. China isn't a place for the faint-hearted. It's really, really difficult. And if you sit in your hotel room or your apartment sucking on your thumb, it's just not going to end well. You have to go out there and just give it everything, every single day. And when you get knocked to the ground, you have to get back up again and again and again. Fortune favors the bold. Fortune favors the brave.
Yeah, I love that.
Here's another great piece of advice here. increase sales while simultaneously controlling cost. Cost control isn't something you do when the economic environment gets tough, has to be focused on every day. So sales and cost control. The Chinese are masters of cost control. I've learned so much about cost control since I've been in China. Just sales alone aren't enough. Just cost control isn't enough. But getting the right balance between sales and cost control, and you'll do really well. The reason cost control is so important in China is because our competitors are really good at controlling costs. If we can't even get in the ballpark, once again, we're dead.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's another cultural difference, especially in the U.S. at least. I mean, I think a lot of West is similar. Everybody treats sales like gods, and sales is the most important. But I think in China, it's about management and, you know, cost controls and management is the focus. That's a great one.
Yep. Okay. Enter action with boldness. China truly isn't for the faint-hearted. One positive thing about being American in this culture is Americans aren't afraid. They're brave. And that's a very, very good thing. Regardless,
I think Australians are pretty brave too.
Yeah. I think we do as well. But Americans have a brashness that we don't have. And it comes across as confidence. That's a really, really good thing. Mm. So the downside is sometimes there's, like many nationalities, there's an ignorance thing. Mm. But the upside to that is the confidence. Confidence is so important. Mm-hmm. Chinese, everyone wants to be led by a good leader, and Americans come across really well in that respect. Okay, so this is more a general rule about business. The goal in business, it's actually about survival. Paying rent, paying salaries, covering operation expenses. Every month that you survive is a greater chance at success. I read somewhere 90% of businesses don't last 5 years, 99% don't last 10 years. Mm-hmm. So the longer you survive, the better you're going to do. And the only way to survive is by constantly tinkering and fixing everything. So the reality is it's actually about survival. The longer you survive for, the more good things happen. Because every single day that goes by, the amount of good things that happen outweigh the bad things. So once again, it's about survival. So if you're sitting there in survival mode thinking, good God, is it worth it? I'm barely surviving. Well, actually, yes, because the longer you survive, the more good things that happen. The more you get noticed, the more people trust you, the more they're aware about your products, your services. Yeah, good things happen to survivors.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's true. These days for general business, but I think especially in China too, or outside of your home country, because you're showing that those people that you're there for the long term, and you're a survivor. So that's good.
Okay, so another great quote. Bruce Lee believes you must be shapeless, formless like water. This is one of my favorite quotes because it covers the importance of adaptability. If your current strategy isn't working in China, you've got to change it. You've got to adapt. If you don't adapt, you die. One of the hardest things for most foreigners to get used to is the fact that you have to change and you have to adapt. Too many people come here with a plan or an idea, and when it doesn't work, they run away with their tails between their legs. They refuse to adapt. They refuse to modify. So adapt or die. As Bruce Lee said, you must be shapeless, formless, like water. Okay, problems. There is always a way. All problems can be solved. You've got to keep searching for the solution until you find it. If you cannot work out the solution yourself, seek out mentors, peers, people that can help. Outside eyes sometimes see what you cannot. So that's really, really important, the problem-solving side, because in China, really, that's what we do. That's what management is. Yeah, you wake up every day, you have a list of problems, you work your list. Fix your most important problem first, second most important problem second. All it truly is problem-solving. And if you're not a good problem-solver, it's going to be pretty tough over here.
Totally agree. Sometimes firefighting, maybe.
Firefighting, putting out fires, yeah. Exactly. Okay, so customers as well. Exceed customer expectations by providing great service or pay off in the long run. It's in China, there's a saying, the customer is God. It's even more relevant over here if you're actually selling into the Chinese market. Chinese customers are feisty, to say the least. They expect great service. And if they don't get it, they'll let you hear about it. So give great service.
I agree. It's hard too, because we were talking about pricing before, right? So they want the best price and the best service.
Exactly. They're so demanding. Mm-hmm. Great quality and great price. But once again, they have the money. Mm-hmm. Look at the volume of Western goods they buy. The imported cars, the imported goods. So the Chinese market, great quality, great service. It's, if that's your goal, things will work out well for you. Okay, as far as management goes, keep management as flat as possible. This is also goes to cost control. There's no need for multi layers of management or pretending to work, pretending to do things. Keep management as flat as possible to help you keep costs down. And also, it allows you to listen to your team, listen to everyone at the even the lowest levels that are dealing with your customers, because you're going to get some of the best feedback from the people that are dealing with your customers. Okay, next one. Respect. Respect is earned. In a country like China, an Asian culture, respect is so important. Treat everybody respectfully, whether you're dealing with a waitress, a delivery guy, because they talk. There's this massive network of them, and they all talk. Yeah. They all talk. So be respectful. Treat everybody respectfully. Being the man, bossing people around, belittling people, doesn't really work over here. Respect is a very, very powerful tool. Treat everybody well.
I think it's similar to your earlier point about the emotions being flat, treating everyone to equal.
Yeah. Too many times in the West, we like to be the boss and boss people around. I'm the boss. I told you to do that. Why didn't you do that? But it's really, it's how you deal with people and how you deal with those problems. I find humor is a good tool. Softly, softly is just how to retrain. Shouting and screaming, it just doesn't work. So, guanxi. Lots of people talk about guanxi in China. Guanxi basically means business relationships. So there's no such thing as too much guanxi. What that means is having business relationships with all the different business departments. The tax department, the business licensing department, hygiene department, environment department. There are so many different departments that you have to have a decent relationship with, because if you don't, they're just going to give you hassle. They're going to make things more difficult for you. Once again, treat them well, treat them respectfully. You're not asking for any advantage. You're just asking to be treated well, and you treat them well and they'll treat you well back in return. It's just a civil relationship. There's no such thing as having too many relationships, too many good relationships.
Yeah, I definitely think you've done a great job with this. I think in food and beverage, like you're in, especially, there's all these licenses. I've heard you talk before about it. There's so many different departments. So there's a lot of things to deal with. So.
Absolutely. So yeah, once again, if you've got good relationships, then it's much easier to move forward. So many people end up trapped. They make a mistake, they get it wrong, and they just can't get the license they need through. They've got a couple of the licenses and they can't get those final licenses. For whatever reason, they've pissed off the people that provide the licenses. And now it's just their application's being put at the bottom of the pile and they're bleeding. It's costing money every day that they can't get that license. So just having great relationships is really, really important, because whilst waiting for licenses to be issued, it just costs money every single day. Yeah. And you don't want to be in a situation where you're bleeding and waiting for multiple licenses to come through. Okay, so we say it in the West, and it's also true over here, sell, sell, sell. And when you finish selling, sell some more. I believe everyone in my team must sell. Everyone must be focused on selling, as sales fixes most problems. Yeah, China is, it's true in China, it's true in the West. You've just got to sell. Actually, it's even more true over here, because everyone in your team, regardless of their role, has relationships, has sales-related relationships. So I think it's very, very important to have everybody on an incentive-based system to sell. If they can pull in sales, they get commissions, because we need every single person in the team thinking about selling. But as soon as you limit it to sales, then you barely even get that. Once sales know that everyone else in the team is also doing their bit, it puts even more pressure on them. It's just this beautiful, natural pressure. Good God, the CFO just sold. CFO just pulled in a really big deal, bigger than sales have last month. Wow, that's massive pressure. So it's just a great way to get good results out of your sales team. Okay, when brand building, everyone has different theories about this. Once again, it goes back to cost control. You've got to control costs, which means being stingy, but in a smart way. So I think it's important to use all affordable methods for sales and marketing before you start going to the expensive ones. So using social media in every different way, guerrilla marketing, basically do all of the affordable methods before you start doing the expensive methods. Because many times the affordable methods will actually bear great results. And too many times those expensive methods aren't that measurable. You just don't know. I remember 10, 12 years ago spending 45,000 RMB on 1/3 of a page A4 ad. And 12 years ago, that was an insane amount of money to me. 45,000 RMB, it was like, what was that? It was about 8.3. It was about $5,000 US. It was $5,000 US on one ad in one magazine, one time. 1/3 of a page. It worked, but I never ever did it again. The pressure was too great.
That is scary.
The pressure was too great. So once again, stick to those affordable methods for sales and marketing. Next point, don't fear failure. There's nothing wrong with failing. Successful people fail every day, every week. Little failures, medium-sized failures, and even large failures. Failures are what keep you honest. Failure is what keeps your ego in check. That constant reminder that you don't know everything. So failure is beautiful. Failure is to be embraced. There's nothing wrong with getting it wrong. And if you are failing, you're probably not listening to your team enough. It's so important in China to listen to your team. Too many times foreigners come over to China with excellent credentials, just great managers, experts in their field, but they just don't listen to their team. They don't take that soft, subtle advice that their key people are giving them, and they make mistakes. And it truly is only when they listen to their team, they rein in their ego, that they actually truly grow and that they can start to utilize those true skills that they have. The biggest problem is adapting those skills that they have to the China market. So listen to your team. Don't fear failure.
Fail fast, fail often, I think, right, isn't there?
Exactly. And preferably small failures.
With a little money.
Small failures, lots of small failures, not big ones, not even medium-sized ones. So relationships. Once again, it's a bit similar to Guanxi, but just the relationships you have with everybody, with your suppliers, your customers, your partners, your managers, everybody you interact with. Sooner or later, you're going to have tough times. Everybody goes through tough times. And those relationships you've built up, that goodwill you've built up, that guanxi you've built up, will come into play. When cash flow is tight, as eventually it will be and it always is, those relationships you have with your suppliers and your customers are what will see you through the tough times. Once you can say to them, hey, can I just put this payment off for 2 weeks? I've got some cash coming in later. Please just cut me a little bit of slack here. If the relationship's good, though, they'll give you that breathing room. So yeah, maintaining those relationships is great. Goes back to treating everybody respectfully. Everybody's a human being. Just treat them respectfully. That's all most people want. Many times, money is secondary. Respect is primary. Okay, so sometimes in the West, we have a little bit of a confrontational way in which we go about business. And we accumulate enemies. We burn people. Don't burn people.
Yes.
Friends are better than enemies. It's a simple, simple statement, but it's so true. Do everything you can avoid to have your company going to war against another company. Avoid that like the plague. Too many times in the West, we grow up in that sort of confrontational environment, and it ends up in, excuse my French, a pissing contest. Avoid those pissing contests. Avoid war. Don't go to war with another company. Learn from them. Learn their mistakes. Learn what they're doing right. Friends are better than enemies. Try and find ways you can actually work with them. There has to be a way you can work together and both benefit, because friends are better than enemies. Sooner or later, you're both going to come across someone who's bigger and who's going to try and squash you like the little bugs that you are. But if there's lots of you working together, your network's big and strong, if you're lucky, you'll survive. But if you're a lone wolf and you've got no friends, you'll get slaughtered. So, once again, friends are better than enemies. The next point, try and find mentors. There are people out there that know more than you. Spend some time with them. More often than not, these type of people are more than willing to give you all their advice for free. You can go to consultancy companies and pay real money for it. But they're actually just, it's a business relationship. You pay them money, they give you advice. There are many people out there that are willing to help you and mentor you. Also, if you have the opportunity and there's new people on the block, mentor them, give them help, give them advice. More often than not, when you positively impact someone, they're going to try and positively impact you back, introduce a customer, help you out, maybe even point out with their fresh eyes what they've seen that your business is doing and is wrong. They might not get it right all the time, but good, honest input is always important. So be a mentor to other people and find people to mentor you. Having people with new eyes look at your business is always good, even if they don't actually, if they're not in the same field or they don't have a similar background to you. So China is a tough, tough environment to live in. The food is different. The environment is different. Everything is different. So you've got to go out of your way to try and stay as healthy as you can. So in the West, we talk about good diet and exercise. It's even more important over here. For whatever reason, the food seems to be more oily over here. And if you're doing lots of banquets, you're going to be eating more oily foods and you're going to be drinking more alcohol. You're not drinking Bud Light, you're drinking Baijiu. 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 A session on Baijiu over banquet. You're doing 10, 15, maybe even 20 shots of Baijiu over a 3-hour session.
Yeah, my face has gone numb sometimes with that.
So, how to counteract that? Eat as healthily as possible and exercise as much as you can. It'll increase your productivity and it'll counteract the negative things that you encounter when you're doing banquets or eating local food. So once again, remove carbohydrates, sugar, as little alcohol as you can, because many times in a work-related environment, you're going to be drinking a lot anyway. And don't expect massive changes. Incremental improvements to diet are really, really important. Over a period of time, it'll positively impact you. And it'll give you increased energy levels, which means greater productivity, greater confidence. And all of this will mean that you'll be more successful.
That's definitely true. I mean, I've gotten finally better eating better. I used to save money on noodles and stuff, but yeah, I'm trying to eat better. It's definitely.
Yeah, I think eliminating those carbs, noodles, white rice, it's just pastas, get them out of the diet. The more vegetables, the better. And the positive thing in China is vegetables are just so affordable. Mm-hmm. So just gorge on vegetables. Okay, even as far as staying healthy, it even goes down to breathing, oxygenating your body with deep breathing. It's so important to energize your body. Hydration, keep your body hydrated. It's very, very hot over here in China most of the time. So get fluids into your body. And you want mineral water as well, fluids that won't flush the minerals out of your system. So breathing, hydration, also really, really important. If you're not, your body's not oxygenated and hydrated, you'll have reduced productivity. It's tough enough as it is here without basically having enough hydration. Okay, so back to your team. Reward loyalty. Loyalty has to be rewarded. It's a beautiful thing. People in life, and especially in China, they need certainty, that sense of family, as mentioned before. Reward loyalty. People, the longer someone's been in your team and the better they've looked after you, the more you have to look after them. And I don't mean loyalty with increased salary. That's something to be careful with. Increased bonuses. Every time someone positively impacts your business or does something, throw a bonus. Bonuses, bonuses, bonuses. Throw those bonuses around like you'd eat M&Ms. And finally, don't take yourself too seriously. You've got to do your best to enjoy the ride. We only get to find out how successful we are at the end. So if you don't enjoy the ride, what's the point?
It's the adventure, right?
Exactly. It's all about the adventure. If you're not enjoying it, it's really not going to last. You've got to love what you do. It goes back to what we said before. So don't take yourself too seriously. Love what you do and enjoy the ride. It's a great adventure.
Wow. It's really, thank you so much for sharing this, Marcus. Really, really, really I learned a lot. I'm sure everybody listening has learned too. So great. We're moving to just a couple closing points, maybe a little bit more about you and your focus. You know, you're known really with your restaurants and your wine businesses, you know, as local, but I know you've done some online business. Do you want to share a little bit about that? Or
yeah, so one of my key focuses is food and beverage, and we have quite a few businesses related to that. But technology, I'm new to technology, being old, basically a dinosaur.
Kind of disruptive.
Exactly. Disruptive is the word of the day. So I've been lucky. Actually, one of the rules to life, and definitely China, is you've got to learn new things. And if you're really bad at something, find people that are good at it and befriend them. Learn from them. If they're good at something you're not good at, probably you're good at something they're not good at. You can share information. So IT people, I source them out. I chase them, I find them, I stalk them and try and learn everything they know. And in return, I help them how I can. I partnered up with a gentleman by the name of Marshall Taplitz, and we founded a business called Shenzhen Standard, which is an online digital newspaper. It did quite well. And another one of our partners eventually decided he wanted to try and take it in a different direction. So he bought us out, and we wished him the best. And it was definitely an interesting experience. Another business I'm involved with the same gentleman, Marshall Taplitz, is Spaxtel, which is a callback service. Basically, it just provides crystal clear calls all over the world, which is what a lot of people want. Definitely we expats living overseas. Now, this business is experiencing incredible growth. Sometimes you get involved in a business and it's just a home run. This is one of those businesses. Now, I'd like to take credit for being so wonderful, but unfortunately I can't. It's basically all Marshall. Marshall has done monster hours and he's just created an incredible business. Once again, it goes back to love what you do. Just give it 100%, work monster hours, and good things will happen. And that's what Marshall's done. And it's been almost a privilege to come along for the ride and help out how I can.
Yeah, I'm a user too. It's great. It's a great service.
Yep. So there's actually a couple of other little businesses we're getting involved with technology-wise as well. Another one is a social networking platform. Call it a mini Facebook for entrepreneurs, business people, anybody that's trying to get ahead, anybody that's trying to do something over here in China. Firstly, we'll target Shenzhen and then we'll target China wide. It's very, very difficult to communicate with people in China. It's difficult to talk to all the foreigners over here. When I say foreigners, there's a couple of hundred nationalities over here in China. And we're not just talking Caucasian foreigners as well. We're talking Koreans, Japanese, Singapore, Taiwan, Hong Kong. There are just so many foreigners here. I mean, just to put it into context, one of my restaurants had a party for, I think it was for Azerbaijan or Armenian nationals. We had a couple of hundred Armenian or Azerbaijani people having an annual party in one of my restaurants. And I've never met one person from that country, and I've met a lot of people. So yeah, everybody's over here, and it's really about creating a way to help everybody talk and communicate. And that's another business we'll be doing going forward. It's in incubation stage at the moment. And one of the newer businesses we're getting involved with is a delivery company. There'll be a WeChat app with this delivery company. WeChat is the way to communicate going forward. People will be able to download the app, get online, and order restaurant food, order supermarket products, and have it delivered to their house within 30 minutes. It's what a lot of people want in China. Really, people just don't have the resources. Many times I don't even have a vehicle here. So going out and filling the station wagon up or the SUV with food is just not really an option. So having everything delivered to their house is really a solution a lot of people are looking for. So obviously that'll be Shenzhen first, then Guangdong, then China. And that's one of our most exciting businesses going forward.
Great. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing these next couple roll out, and I'm familiar with your others. So thanks for sharing that. And we'll link those also on the website for people that want to check them out for more information. A couple more points. So I like to ask people, you know, it seems like you're here for the long term in China. And what do you see as the long term? Maybe 5, 10, 20 years?
Wow. Great question. Yeah. Wow. The truth is no one knows anything about China.
That's why we love it, right?
Yeah. No one knows anything about China. As soon as you meet someone that pretends to know about China, you just have to have a chuckle, because we don't really know, none of us really know that much. And even those of us that do know, actually know, we don't know that much. That's the crazy reality. But in saying all of that, China has an incredible future. People talk about debt levels in China, but when people buy vehicles in China, as an example, you either pay cash or you put the land, the title deed up for your property, and then you put 40% down. So it's a 40% deposit, and you put a land title deed to guarantee it, or you pay cash. One time I actually tried to get a car mortgage to buy three vans for one business, and it was such a hassle, an intentional hassle, I assume, that I just had to pay cash. I needed the vehicles quickly, so I had to pay cash, and everyone seems to be in the same boat. So there's not really an issue as far as vehicle debt goes. Then you talk about property debt. If you're buying secondhand, when I bought secondhand, it was 50% down. That was before it got tough. I can't imagine what it is now if you want to buy secondhand. If you want to buy new, 30% down if it's brand new. And if you want to buy the second one, pay the first one off. So you have to pay 100% off before you can buy the second one. So in that sort of environment, what is the risk to the banking sector? The majority of property that was purchased in China, I would say 90%, was purchased at least 5 years ago. And that was before valuations really went crazy. So a lot of people, if someone bought a property for, let's say, $500,000 RMB, $100,000 American, $600,000 RMB, would have been a nice property, say, 10 years ago. They probably put down 20% deposit, which was how it was at the time. After 10 years, they've paid off half of that. So 20% down, call 120,000 RMB. They still owe 480, paid off half, 240. That's a paid off for, 420. They still owe 180, I think that's right. So they owe technically 180 on a property worth 600K. It's not worth 600K anymore. It's probably worth 2 million RMB. So ballpark, they owe 200K on something worth 2 mil. So the rough math on it is a lot of those old properties, the debt to equity ratios are really, really low. 5, 10, 15, 20, 25% is a lot of the debt on a lot of those properties. And new properties, you've got to pay the old ones off before you can buy the second one. So I don't really see that the property market is as bad as it seems. Beijing's been very, very wise and mature, way more mature than most of our Western countries. And they've basically flatlined the property market. They've made it really, really hard to buy new properties. It's really hard to speculate. There's no 5% down or 0% down. 30% at the minimum, pay the first property off. So I don't see property debt as a major issue. And some people say, oh, what about all the small cities? They owe 5 billion, 10 billion. Who cares? They own land. Those local governments own land. It's pretty easy to sell land and write off debt. Land will always have a value, and especially in a place like China, with 1.2, 3, 4, 5 billion, depending on who you believe. So people say that China has a lot of problems going forward. I don't really see it. Then you look at the state-owned entities. Beijing is very wise in how they tax the people. They go after us business people, and they have lots of sort of inadvertent taxes, surreptitious taxes. Basically, we pay more for power. Businesses pay more for power than residential. We pay more for telecommunications as well. So it's a very, very wise way to tax business people, because sometimes not all business people accurately declare what they earn. Also with importing as well, China's very, very meticulous in how it goes after business people for any imported goods. Never ever make a mistake for that, because they are very, very vigilant. Never ever underdeclare goods when you're importing them into a country. They will find out. They will go after you. They have gone after whole industries, and it's brutal. You don't want to be on the receiving end of that. So how is China? China's doing fine. It's very, very cashed up. It truly is a cash-based society. The Chinese people don't do debt. I mean, one time I looked at credit card debt in China. It was many years ago, but it was $1 billion American. Credit card debt of $1 billion, that's nothing. It's basically tourists and international students. That's all. When people go overseas and purchase things, they use credit card. Kids might be putting tuition on the credit card and have dad paying it off. So really, I don't even see credit card as a problem going forward. And then you look at the Chinese economy and you just wonder, how's it going to fare? Well, all foreign companies need a China strategy. And most of them still don't have a China strategy. So many companies aren't in China yet. They don't have a presence. They don't have a China strategy. Many of them still aren't buying Chinese goods to reduce costs, to drop operation expenses. They aren't selling into the Chinese market because they haven't worked out how. So everyone needs a China strategy. Most people haven't worked it out. What that means is even more foreign direct investment into the Chinese marketplace. And as it gets easier to do business in China, that'll be more attractive to more people. As every day goes by, China becomes more livable. For a lot of us that have been here for a while, there were some tough times.
Yeah, it was definitely tough times.
Even people that do not like McDonald's dreamt of McDonald's. McDonald's was a treat, even for people that hate McDonald's, just because it was as close to Western food as you could get. But now China's becoming very, very livable. Livable it becomes the more families can accept being over here. So the volume of expats and adventurous families will increase. So the volume of Chinese foreign people coming into China will just go up and up. And that also means lots of opportunity for everyone. So I think China hasn't even truly started the big up. If you look at the American economy, the big up in the American economy, I forget what years it occurred. I think it was some about the 60s or something.
World War II.
There was this massive hockey stick up on American economic growth. And a lot of that came was when they interlinked all the American cities and all the American states. I forget what it's called, the Great Highway Program or the Interstate Highway Program.
Yeah.
Once America interlinked all its cities and its states, that's when the massive up occurred. Guess what? China hasn't done it yet. It's in the process of doing it right now. So many cities and provinces and municipalities and economic zones are not linked together. And this creates massive, massive growth. Even when you look at the amount of money being invested into infrastructure, subway lines, bridges, roads, this is all fantastic for the economy as well. The Chinese aren't wasting money on wars currently, like some of our Western nations are. They're pouring it into infrastructure that benefits the people and benefits the economy. Okay, there's wastage, there's corruption, occurs in every country. Get over it. Pouring money into infrastructure is a good thing, and they're doing it on a massive scale. So I see that causing a massive up in the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years, the amount of money they're pouring into infrastructure. The fact that China is more accessible to a wider range of people, not just we adventurous people, and just the fact that China's cashed up. There truly isn't really that much debt. Most of that debt is irrelevant debt, debt that city governments have that can be negated. So I actually see the next 5, 10, 20 years in China being actually very, very good. The secret for China, avoid war.
True. Which I'm always a little bit nervous about, but hopefully there's no war.
Yeah.
We don't like war for sure. Okay, thank you so much for sharing again. That's really insightful too. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of listeners who might want to reach out to you or check out what you're doing. How can they go about doing that?
Maybe I'll add my LinkedIn profile.
Yeah, your LinkedIn profile there.
It actually has my mobile phone number and my email address. I never actually answer the mobile phone, so sending a text is a good first step because there's just too many calls even coming in right now. But emails get answered within about 3 days.
Okay, great.
Yeah, so...
Thanks so much, Marcus.
Okay, thanks, Michael.
Right. That's a wrap. Thank you, Marcus, for sharing those insights. I'm sure people learned a ton and... Even I learned some things, even though I've been around the block for a few times. Marcus is this pretty amazing guy who always builds the right team, builds up great ventures, and drives constant business. We should all learn from him. But like everyone, he had a lot of learning lessons. We just have to keep taking action, taking risks, staying positive when things might not go our way, and keep pushing forward. That's how we grow and we learn. Okay, everybody, and that's a wrap. It was a longer show than normal. Normally, I kind of keep it to 20, 30 minutes. Not sure what you guys think. Do you want it longer? Or is this too long? I think it's a little bit too long for every week. Maybe sometimes we'll do it a little bit longer. I live off feedback for this show and everything I do, so I really appreciate anything you guys want to let me know. Shoot me an email at mike@globalfromasia.com and I'll get back to you. And thanks a lot and have a great day. Bye-bye.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com.